All right, so anybody that knows me knows how much I love the NFL. I actually was joking with my brother going into the weekend, and I called it like a drug. And I mean, I guess that isn't funny. I shouldn't laugh. If I could go back and take that back, I would. But I mean, sometimes it's kind of what it feels like. I mean, you know, I'm listening to the NFL radio, and I go downstairs and watch NFL live and get in the car, NFL radio is on again. Cut on the Xbox, I'm playing Madden. You know, it's just the NFL is everywhere, but I love football. And I actually specifically remember falling in love, not just with football, but with the NFL. And it's a moment that I'll never forget. You know, I got to see Emmitt Smith play, you know, for the first time. I was like 5 years old. And it's the art of teamwork that football presents is something that's inexplainable, and it's just exhilarating to watch. Unfortunately, it's extremely dangerous. But we'll get into all of that later. But I never forget that moment, you know. And I actually ended up getting a Emmitt Smith like uniform set, like the whole thing. If I could find a picture, I'ma post it. That's a big if though. But I had like the helmet, you know, the jersey, the cleats, like the whole nine sitting under the tree for me that Christmas of 1995. It's also the same Christmas that I got my first video game system, which is the Sega Genesis, which started my love for video games. So it was a big, you know, 1995 was a pivotal year for me. And I'm willing to bet that anybody else that's in my age range, I would say kind of born in that 89 to 93 time period, 1995 probably was a big year for you. And I feel like that's just because a lot of things were introduced to society that year. But anyways, yeah, I'll never forget it. Put on the jersey and everything, took pictures and all of that, and boom, NFL fan was born. That was the beginning of everything we see today. Something else that I will never forget. We have never seen a player die on the football field. On maybe the second biggest stage of NFL weekend, which is Monday Night Football. We've never seen anything like that. We've also never witnessed a miracle like that. Now, for you atheists, we've also never witnessed a miracle like that. I don't know. There's no other way I can. There's no other way I could put it, you know. But it's just been a wild couple of weeks as an NFL fan because the news surrounding Damar Hamlin's collapse and cardiac arrest on field, a moment where we all thought we witnessed a player pass away, the news that came out a couple of days later was remarkable. It's nothing more than a medical miracle. But today, we're going to explore that medical miracle. We're going to kind of go back to what happened, and we're going to see where Damar Hamlin is today, how he's doing today, and we're going to explore why I think it's a high possibility that you could see Damar Hamlin return to the NFL field. Welcome to episode 177. It's Live BW, baby. Let's go, Cora.
What's the survival rate of cardiac arrest patients? How fast did the NFL's medical staff respond to Hamlin's collapse? What does it all mean for his future? That and more coming up on Live BW.
Live in a beautiful state.
This is Live BW. Season 8, Episode 177, Why Damar Hamlin Could Return to Football. Let's explore. This is where we live.
All right, so I hate to take you back to that night. I hate to relive it, but we got to kind of rehash it to set up the research, if you will. We already stated the hypothesis. We got to kind of go into the research and go into exactly what happened. And we all know that Buffalo Bills safety, Damar Hamlin, suffered a cardiac arrest after trying to make a tackle. Now, it was a routine tackle. It wasn't anything crazy. Like, we've seen some wild tackles in the NFL where you see head-to-head collisions. You know, you see guys falling on people's limbs and stuff like that. But this was like, you know, as somebody who played football between 1996 and 2009, I've always been under the impression that, like, you know, getting hit like in your chest area was pretty much a safe haven because, you know, the pads kind of, at least in my estimation, the pads do cover your chest area. at least to some degree. You know, I've always felt protected around my chest area. And I'm someone who, my chest area was always a concern for my doctors whenever I wanted to play sports, but just in life in general, even until this day, honestly. When I went into the hospital last July, that was, you know, one of the main concerns. So even as an adult, it's still something that, you know, I deal with, but it's also something that if I had to play football, if I was playing football, I would feel safe, honestly, from a chest hit. Now the head and the neck have always been my concerns, and, you know, any limbs, any extremities that are exposed, if you will. But, you know, this hit was to the chest, and he was the guy that was making the tackle. I mean, it was just a weird situation, because it's things that, like I mentioned on the intro, we've never witnessed anything like that. This is so rare. Even beyond the actual cardiac arrest that ensued, did the type of hit that was made, the fact that it was a defender that got hurt and not the offense. Like, all of this stuff is just things that are just super rare.
95% of the time. So you're essentially a weak side linebacker in the run game as well.
Here's Higgins wide open to midfield and lowers the shoulder for 13.
This is where Joe Burrow is so good.
And now another Bills player is down.
And in DeMar Hamlin's case, you know, he collided with T. Higgins and, you know, hit his chest. And, of course, he tried to bounce right back up once he, you know, got hit or whatever and knocked down. Tried to bounce right back up, and that's when we saw him collapse. And unfortunately, there's no other way to say this, but at least for a couple of minutes, DeMar Hamlin lost his life right there. We saw that on live TV. And I do give the NFL credit. I give the players credit, the teammates credit for trying to make that as private as possible on the field. You see the guys kind of congregate to prevent the line of sight to really see the medics performing that heroic CPR maneuver and using AED and all of that. We got to see some of that stuff to a certain extent. The players kind of closed the curtain on us and gave DeMar Hamlin some privacy. So it was just a weird scene. And it was one of those things that, as I mentioned before, we will never forget. Now, the NIH defines cardiac arrest as something that occurs when the heart suddenly and unexpectedly stops pumping. They also say that blood stops flowing to the brain and other vital organs, and is caused by certain type of arrhythmias that prevent the heart from pumping blood. They do consider this a medical emergency, duh. And, you know, without question, it's a very serious thing. According to heart.org, the survival rate for cardiac arrest is less than 12%. Less than 12%. And I believe that's with, I wish I wrote this one down too. Like, I have that brain sometimes where I'll read, like I read a ton of research papers for this. And I read a lot of, you know, online information about, you know, just health stuff. And it's just, I soaked it up. And a lot of things piqued my interest, but I didn't write down everything. But Heart.org says the survival rate of cardiac arrest is less than 12%. And I believe I read something that says that's if you are administered CPR in time. Still less than 12%. If you don't have the CPR, I want to say it was like 7% survival rate, which is still technically less than 12%. But, you know, these are just numbers. I'm just throwing them out there for you. But no matter how you put it, if you were a betting man or woman, unfortunately, you probably would have been able to make a safe bet to say that he would not have made it that night. I know that sounds grim and gruesome, but that's literally what DeMar Hamlin was facing on the NFL field on the second biggest stage of the weekend in front of everybody. That's what he was dealing with. I would be remiss if I didn't mention, given those numbers from heart.org, I would say DeMar Hamlin's case was obviously different, because although it was a high anxiety situation, the second biggest stage of the NFL weekend, it happened during an NFL game. So medics and medical staff from both sidelines, and also people that weren't even on the sideline, from what I understand, Dr. Sanjay Gupta did a special on the NFL's medical procedures and stuff for every game. It premiered last week. I thought it was the most genius thing that CNN has done in weeks, actually. Although I did enjoy that documentary about the insurrection. I just thought it was very informative. But anyways, yeah, so in that documentary, like, I learned that you got medics on both sides, but you also have guys or girls or just people in general, I'm sorry, people coming from local medical staffs that have all sorts of expertise that aren't particularly there there for any particular team. They're there to help with their expertise whenever it's needed. They ain't on no sideline. They just on the field, you know, and you got to always know where they are because they're the specialist, they're the expert that specializes in something specific and will be there if you need them. I had no clue that happened. And my uncle is a team doctor for the Bengals. I had no clue. The NFL was super prepared for this, and you got to give them credit and give them kudos. I know everybody was giving them hell when it first happened, but I mean, the fact of the matter is this. This is what I was getting to. I think DeMar Hamlin's chances of survival were significantly higher than 12%. However, there's no way to truly get a confident statistic for that. There's no way we can measure that, especially at this stage of the game. It happened 2 weeks ago. We don't know. But given the fact that he is surrounded by literally some of the best doctors in, I would argue, in the world. I mean, you know, people come here to study medicine, and some of those best doctors are picked up by the NFL. So it may not be much of a stretch to say that he was surrounded by some of the best medical care that you can find as a human being on this earth. So his chances were probably higher than 12%. According to CNN, the ambulance is on the field in less than 5 minutes, which doesn't happen to a lot of people who suffer cardiac arrest at home. CNN also says that staff, that medical staff that I was talking about from both sidelines and also the random people, were on the field and administering CPR, helping DeMar Hamlin within 10 seconds. Boom, he drops. Less than 10 seconds, the staffs are out to the field and are helping him out. Hopped in the ambulance. They were able to wait for his mom to come down and then went to the hospital. And not to mention, we go back, they also had the AED ready to go, which is something that isn't available to everybody, which I'll tell you why coming up. And I'll also tell you why I think we should change that part of society. I got all of that coming up too. But he was rushed to the hospital, and honestly, we didn't hear much about any of this for like 24 hours. Now, I don't mean it like that. We heard about it everywhere, but we didn't get the details for a while. I won't say we were left in the dark because it's none of our business. Honestly speaking, it's none of our business. But, you know, you can't help but worry a little bit. It's like, you know, what's going on? You kind of wish the family was updating and the league was giving very PC answers. The news was repeating itself a couple times an hour, you know, and you just didn't really hear anything. They did a really good job of keeping all of that under wraps. And it's good to give them their privacy. I understand that. But from our perspective, you know, it had us asking a lot of questions. At least for me, had me asking a lot of questions. But I truly think that everyone was thinking the same thing and nobody wanted to really admit it. Like, even when we were talking, like when I was talking to some of my friends about it and stuff, you know, everybody was kind of dancing around the fact that, you know, we may lose DeMar Hamlin. It's almost like nobody wanted to admit that they were asking that question of whether or not he will survive. I think because what we witnessed was so shocking. Like, we literally witnessed the shock of death at an NFL game. That's a lot to process. So naturally, you're going to have a lot of questions. In fact, according to victimsupport.com, when you witness something like that, you know, to that magnitude, or death, you know, even though he was able to be resuscitated, he died. When you witness something like that, it say emotionally you may feel shock, disbelief, confusion, horror, and fear. Horror is just always hard for me to pronounce, so excuse me for for really diving into that word there. But I say you feel guilty and you feel some curiosity as well. And I think that victimsupport.org really highlighted how everyone was feeling for those 48 hours after watching DeMar Hamlin collapse. Like, I know me, especially with the guilt. Here I am, I just put a parlay on. You know, I got a parlay running for this game. And I'm concerned about, you know, them making me, it wasn't even a lot of money, making me like $200. That's my concern. That's what I was worried about. Not even gonna lie to you. I was curled up on the sectional with my lady. She had something on the TV and I was watching. I wasn't even watching the actual game. I was watching the stats. And the game just froze. And I was looking at the stats, I was like, what's going on, you know? And then I cut it on, and that's when I saw everything that had happened. But I was watching the stats because I was hoping that they would take care of my parlay. I felt really guilty because of that. Here I am trying to make money, and this kid basically dies on the field. It made me think about the sport that I mentioned on the intro that I had fallen in love with as a 5-year-old. I just felt guilty for all of that. That's probably the main thing. Of course the shock, of course the disbelief, because you hear the sayings that you could die on the field. You know, you go out there, when you leave the locker room, you got to be willing to die for this, you know. All those team captains that I've had over the years, that's what they've said in some way, shape, or form. It just depends on their background and their culture. They say it a little bit differently, depending on the captain, but... You know, you hear that thing. You hear it. But you never really, I guess you never really fully process the fact that that is true. You can die on this football field. This is literally a gladiator sport that's based on collisions between grown men who are considered gigantic compared to the rest of society. It's a dangerous game, man. A really dangerous game. But I was in disbelief that you really could die on the field. And it happened, you know? But then I was really curious, too, about, I didn't want the NFL to let me down. Because they've done some things, let's be honest, the NFL's done some things over the last decade or so, especially being a fully coherent adult, as opposed to when I first fell in love with the NFL in 1995. The NFL has done some things that make you raise your eyebrows. It just is what it is. Not both the eyebrows, but one of them. I didn't want this to be another situation like that, because I didn't want to be faced with the decision of, should I support this league again? I didn't want to have to deal with that again. And they made me ask questions like that so often recently. I don't want to have to deal with that again. So I was wondering, are they going to stop the game? And if they don't stop the game, dude, I can't believe that they don't care that much. That's crazy to me. That's like insane. You had a guy that died on the football field. You need to stop the game. And then the rumors were going around saying that, you know, they didn't stop it, and or they weren't going to, and, you know, all types of stuff. But it was just a lot that happened so quick surrounding this. And this is where we are as a society, that, you know, social media is going to start talking. And unfortunately, I don't know the actual percentage, but I'm pretty sure there's one that exists. But I would say a high percentage of that hearsay is BS or Betty Crocker. Like, it ain't real. You know, it's not real stuff. In fact, the NFL actually responded with official statements and stuff later that night, which is, you know, things that I really appreciate. Unfortunately, some people don't believe it. Some people still believe that the NFL was trying to find a way to get those teams back out on the field after DeMar Hamlin collapsed. I don't believe it. I believe Troy Vincent. Troy Vincent is the NFL VP of football operations, and he said, quote, "There is no playbook for this." He basically shut down all of those rumors, saying that the league was thinking about continuing to play after that. He said he doesn't even know where people got that from.
Just trying to make sure that we were keeping everyone abreast of what was taking place and what we were thinking prior to the decision being made to, at this particular juncture, both the head coaches came back, got on the phone with myself again, communicated with the commissioner, that the players, head coaches, and we just felt like collectively that it was time to communicate with the general public, of those that were in the stadium, that we were going to postpone play. And that was just kind of walking you through what was happening real time, who we were communicating with, myself personally. It was really about DeMar and making sure that, and look, I've never seen anything like it since I've been playing. So immediately, my player hat went on. And how do you resume play after you've seen such a traumatic event occur in front of you real time? And that's the way we were thinking about it.
And I believe him, because he's never given me a reason to think otherwise. Your inhibitions, your thoughts, that's on you. The fact of the matter is, the game was canceled. I mean, of course you can't just cancel a game like right when the injury happens, because you have a stadium full of 70,000 people that you have to make sure get out safely. You have to have an exit plan. You have to have people prepared for what you are about to do for this. You know, it's just, I get it. I understand exactly where Troy Vincent was coming from. You know, although it took some time, because they had to, you know, make the plans to do so, but the game was canceled. It's weird, because then just a couple days later, he was like, DeMar Hamlin was up and talking, and then here we are 2 weeks later, and I mean, he's released, looking great, looking like himself, honestly. In fact, if we really chronicle the statements from the Buffalo Bills throughout this entire fiasco, he was able to breathe fully on his own on January 6th. Well, let me backtrack, because he woke up on the 5th. Then he was able to fully breathe on his own without the ventilator on January the 6th, and then he was released from Buffalo General on January 11th, and I missed one in there. At some point between the 6th and the 11th, he was transferred from Cincinnati's UMUC Hospital to Buffalo General, and they wanted to test and see how his breathing did on a flight. So they flew him from Cincinnati to Buffalo, where he stayed in the hospital for a couple days. But as I mentioned, he was released on the 11th. And of course, the incident happened on January the 2nd. A very interesting timeline. Nothing more than a medical miracle. I can't even apologize to the atheists, because there's no other words to describe that. It is what it is. But I think the miracle is going to continue to do its work. I think it really is possible that if Damar Hamlin wanted to, he could get back out on the football field. Now, is this something that I'm comfortable with? No. But I mean, that'll be his decision when he's ready to do so. I hope he doesn't, but that's me being selfish from dealing with the shock and all of that and the guilt that, you know, we had just discussed. But scientifically, health-wise, I do think it may be possible that Damar Hamlin could be able to get back on the football field should he choose to do so. We'll talk about it on the other side. Live BW.
Coming right back at y'all.
If you're listening on Spotify, be sure to answer our Spotify question of the day. Do you think Damar Hamlin will return to play football? Let us know. We're calculating all the answers from the village. Let your voice be heard. Brought to you by Spotify.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
More's what I'm coming to get.
Coming up on Live BW, let's look back on Hamlin's remarkable two-week recovery and how the league's quick response did more than save his life. They may have actually saved his quality of life, too.
Live in a beautiful state.
The beat. All right, so it's been a very eventful, or it was a very eventful week for Damar Hamlin and the Buffalo Bills last week, and it started with Sean McDermott. He put out a statement saying that Damar Hamlin had been to the practice facility almost daily over the last couple of days.
You know, Damar's in the building now, almost starting daily, and so that's good news. And as he continues to improve, I think those are, you know, that certainly helps. So that's going to be, I mean, that experience is, we'll carry that with us. And there's a challenge to that, but there's also a lot of good that came from that. And I think right now we need to focus on the positive, and the positives that came out of that, as opposed to the other piece of it right now.
Then the most recent report is actually one that is kind of tough to read and to understand, but it just goes to show you where he's at right now. It says Damar still requires oxygen and is having his heart monitored regularly to ensure there are no setbacks or after effects. That's what Jordan Rooney said. He's a friend of the family, and that was published in HuffPost going into the weekend. So it's a little bit convoluted, if you will, because on one end you got these reports of him having fantastic health and having a fantastic image, if you will, looking kind of back to normal, back in the practice facility with his boys, with his teammates. And then on the other end, you're hearing that he still needs to have oxygen in order to, you know, help himself breathe, and that, you know, he's still being monitored regularly. Now, the monitored regularly thing, I think that's a no-brainer. That's going to happen. That's kind of what you expect after witnessing what we witnessed, or after what he's gone through. But the fact that he still needs oxygen, that does kind of raise some sort of flag as to his condition. You know, he's doing great, but maybe just not as super great as we may have thought. He's still, as the family friend said, you know, he has a road of recovery ahead of him. He's not all the way back. But even given all of that information and given the last week or so that he's had, I still think it's possible he can come back. Now, again, I don't know if it's something that I necessarily want to see, but if he wanted to, scientifically and health-wise, it could be a thing. Now, what makes the whole thing murky is that family, the friends, the teammates, the team in general, they put up that curtain, and we really don't know a lot of information about exactly what happened. There were some speculations of commotio cordis, which Wikipedia describes. I know they said don't use Wikipedia, but we're going to read this one. Describes it as a rare lethal disruption of heart rhythm that occurs as a result of a blow to the area directly over the heart, the precordial region, at a critical time during the cycle of a heartbeat. Some people were speculating, and you know, it does make sense. Like, okay, I get it. That does look like what we saw, but unfortunately, we haven't got anything official from anybody. Got a lot of doctors, a lot of cardiologists who were speculating that online, but we haven't heard that from his medical staff, from his care team, from the team in general. We don't know if it was a pre-existing condition that caused all of this. We have no clue. We don't know if it was a reaction to something other than a hit. We have no clue. But without all of the knowledge, we don't know all of the risks that are involved with a potential return. But what we can do is take a look at what happens after a cardiac arrest, what happens to the body, what happens to the mind as cardiac arrest survivors continue to try to live their lives. And then we can kind of make another estimation to see if his return is possible. So according to med.nyu, a lot of cardiac arrest patients, or survivors I should say, suffer what's called a hypoxic ischemic brain injury. And they say this is the most common, and I may have not pronounced that correctly. I'm a radio host, I don't know. I'm just reading. But they say this is the most common, and it can cause significant disability. Now, this is caused when it takes a while for, you know, the heart to start pumping again and for airflow to start, flowing again through the body. It's when the brain spends a lot of time without air. They say the longer it takes for the brain to get the air, the more damage is done. And I guess that goes hand in hand with, like, I guess just mental abilities in general, like memory and motor functions, motor skills, stuff like that. All of that gets affected if that were an issue. But again, Damar received such great care in such a small time. It sounds like those medical heroes that were out on that field that night kind of helped him avoid all of that. Now, NYU also says that a high percentage of survivors experience some sort of functional ability decrease. And they say that it depends on the part of the brain, if any, that was affected by the attack. Now, again, we have no clue the details of exactly what happened, exactly what was affected. I think the doctors in their press conferences did a great job of telling us a lot while still protecting Damar Hamlin's privacy. In the end, meaning that we really don't know too much. We just know that he's okay. But they say that some people literally have mental nightmares of suffering another cardiac arrest. And that's just part of that functional ability decrease. They say, again, depending on which part of the brain is mostly affected, you can see reduced mental function and a reduced loss of focus and decision making. Now, as you can imagine, that could cause some issues on the football field, because the larger the gap of decision making you face as an athlete or as a football player, the more risk you face in getting hurt. You can't like hesitate. You gotta like know what you need to do and do it. It's really a reaction thing, especially for defensive guys. That's a reaction side of the ball. You know, a reduced mental function or a reduced focus in decision making, that just, you know, you don't want him being a deer in headlights on the field. That's dangerous. It's really dangerous. So I can see how that could affect his possible return. But again, we don't know if he's experiencing any of this. And again, he was given such great care in such a short amount of time, they may have prevented all of this. Now, these next couple of numbers are things that I would say I'm the most worried about, and that's that 45 to 50% of cardiac arrest survivors experience depression, 25% experience PTSD, and 61% experience anxiety, which kind of is hinged on what we had mentioned earlier, where, you know, you just in the back of your mind always know that it's something that you could experience again. Now, they say those numbers are mostly associated with a lower quality of life, which is something that, again, I don't know if DeMar Hamlin is going to experience that. I really think that he was given great care. And not only that, he's still getting great care. He's getting great support from not just the NFL, not just his team, but the entire world. But those are mental battles that, when we speak of mental health, things that we've talked about a lot on this show, you just never know the triggers. You don't know what can lead to what. So it is something that I remain vigilant about. But I thought it was interesting. Most cardiac arrest survivors mention, this is spooky, but mention kind of how it feels, like they felt peaceful, you know, and they have this peaceful reimagination. And this is according to NYU. This is like official research. They have a peaceful reimagination of being resuscitated, kind of experiencing the light, if you will, of passing away and being brought back to life. And I don't know, maybe it's exhilarating to be given a second chance at life. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's experiencing a shock that it's so great of losing your life. Experiencing that shock, maybe that's that imprint that it leaves on you, where it just feels like a peaceful sensation, a peaceful imprint, a moment in time that obviously he'll never forget, because we'll never forget that. The research says, quote, a smaller but important subset of cardiac arrest survivors emerges from the experience with increased physiological resilience and view it as a positive event in their lives. A full understanding of the factors that may predispose patients to follow one mental health trajectory or the other are not well understood. However, one of the main factors in a positive transformational change after cardiac arrest are the ill-understood reports of cognitive experiences in the state of painless and non-traumatic visual and auditory awareness of resuscitation. That's the light. It's like people saying they see the light. That's the light. At least when I read that, that's what I see. Like, that's the light. And that's something that maybe we will hear more of once we hear more from DeMar Hamlin. You know, he's been tweeting a lot. He's been saying a lot of great things to kind of keep everybody inspired and encouraged, not just about the situation, but just about life in general. But whenever he tells his story of that night, I wonder if that's something that we will hear him mention, that light, if you will. Now, as I mentioned, doesn't seem like he's facing any of these concerning side effects. It just doesn't seem like it. They haven't mentioned any of that. In fact, doctors at both UMUC and Buff General say that he's been doing great and he's been passing all of the tests like phenomenally. And even despite the whole reports that came out going into the weekend saying that he's still using oxygen and that he has a long road ahead of him, every expert that speaks on this is blown away with the progress that DeMar Hamlin has made. Most people die after experiencing something like that. And within days, he was back up tweeting and ready to go. So, what does this mean? Whether you want to see it or not, does this mean DeMar Hamlin could possibly be back on the field next year? We'll close it out and answer that question on the other side. Live BW. All right, so in conclusion, life looks a little different and a little difficult for cardiac arrest survivors according to the statistics. If you're able to pass through the eye of that needle and are able to survive that cardiac arrest, it just seems like the quality of life is significantly different. However, this case is significantly different. Only a small percent, I would say in the 5% range of, you know, all humans across the earth, receive this sort of medical care this quick of a time, this consistently. Like the NFL is, they not going to just let bro figure this out on his own. I think they're going to be there, of course. It's not even I think. I know that the NFL is going to continue to offer this great care to DeMar. They have to have this kind of health coverage. It's a gladiator sport. It's a very dangerous sport. And they don't want anything to happen on their watch. And then on top of that, it just doesn't seem like a lot of damage was done. He's breathing on his own. I mean, he does need help with the oxygen, apparently, but he's passing all of these tests. He was talking in full sentences and everything just a couple of days after it happened. He remembered the night. He remembered the game because he asked who won it. You know, he's recognizing people. He's in the practice facility. Some of the players and coaches describe his energy as, almost as if nothing happened. You know, it doesn't seem like there's any crazy effects or crazy damage that was done from this. Thank God, you know. But again, I think that's specifically because he was given such great care so quickly. Now that we have all of this research, my concern is his cognitive ability. If he were to return to the field, would his decision making and his focus be at a level that's enough to make him safe on the football field? Or will he be a deer in headlights? If he's going to be a deer in headlights, he shouldn't be out there. It's very dangerous. Even if he's being affected by the anxiety of still reliving that night, even if he's being affected by just that PTSD, you know, which I guess is the same thing as what I just mentioned. But if he's still dealing with those things and he's reliving those moments and he doesn't, you know, want to hit or get hit, he shouldn't be out there. But that's, again, that's a conversation that I guess as we know more, as we find out more, we'll be able to really, really answer this question. But from this particular juncture, from where we are, given all of the facts that we have been given, which is the facts of his remarkable recovery, the facts of this unbelievable medical miracle, and the facts that he's literally doing great. It's not going to happen this season, of course, but given the summer, you know, the off season and all of that, a nice long time to really bounce back and really, you know, hit all of those marks, it's possible he could be back out there in July. I think so. Now, again, we have to monitor and see how the cognitive ability checks out and hear from doctors as to whether or not there's some sort of underlying condition that could be a concern going forward. If we hear about any of that, then of course that changes things. But as of right now, none of that exists.
Connect with the show on Instagram at LIVEXBW. Pardon the dust, we're renovating. Well, let's be honest. We just need to stop being lazy and post more.
Hey, cut it out.
You can connect with Brian on Twitter and Facebook at BJamesLive. I don't have any of that stuff, but you can always find me here. Now, let's get back to the show.
Now, the lesson in all of this to me, I think that we as a society have seen firsthand, unfortunately, in a very unfortunate situation, but I think we have seen firsthand the benefits of focusing on making sure that all of the necessary cardiac health emergency systems are available. So we're talking CPR and AED. Because having that CPR knowledge is truly life-saving. You don't know. It could happen in the mall. Somebody could pass out around you and may need you to save their life. It could happen in the bathroom, at the movies. Somebody could pass out and may need you to save their life, and you'll have the tools and are capable to do so. But I feel like we could benefit from more people getting CPR trained, because you never know when you'll need that information, unfortunately. It's a very grim and very gruesome thing to think about and thing to say, but the more we face the realities of essentially our demise, the more we can prepare and be there to be heroic. I guess, you know, maybe I should put my money where my mouth is and go ahead and get CPR certified as well. But if I were some sort of governor or state official or city official or something like that, one of my main pushes right now, main campaign pieces right now, would be to make sure that as many people as possible are CPR trained and certified. And I would be very interested to see the cardiac arrest fatalities, the number of those. I would be very interested to monitor that, to see if we can get a decrease in that. And in that same conversation, I wish that AEDs were affordable and were a lot more common amongst businesses. Like, I think that just as you need a fire extinguisher, maybe you need an AED as well, and someone that's trained to use it. You know what I mean? Now, the American Red Cross says an AED is an automated external defibrillator and is used to help those experiencing sudden cardiac arrest. They continue, it's a sophisticated yet easy to use medical device that can analyze the heart's rhythm and, if necessary, deliver an electrical shock or defibrillation to help the heart reestablish an effective rhythm. Now, the issue with it is this is a $1,500 to $2,000 piece of equipment here, according to the American Heart Association. Now, I don't know what needs to happen to bring that price down. I don't know if it's a matter of parts that are used to make such a device, or if it's just a matter of price point where, you know, it's one of those things that has such a high value that you're going to have to pay a lot for. but that's filthy when you think about the health industry. But unfortunately, that's how some medication is priced as well. But that's a completely different episode. We won't get into that here today. But if there was some way to make an AED more common amongst establishments, homes, even if you were to slice that price in half, I think that if you can get something like that into homes and get people trained to use it, again, I would be very interested to see if the numbers of cardiac arrest fatalities, to see if that number comes down. I'd anticipate that it would. I'm not saying that it's easy or something that would be easy to do, but I do think that as a society, it's something that would be super beneficial to us if we were able to do such a thing. Because I can't help but wonder, after what we saw with Damar Hamlin, is there a way to conduct some quote-unquote preventative maintenance so that we can save more lives in the way that Damar Hamlin was saved? The reason essentially that he's still here, and also that he's here in the manner that he's here, pretty much himself, I mean, it's a medical miracle of time, of reaction time, of response time, of having some of the best technology, some of the best minds ready to go within a small amount of time. And he's walking around the practice facility, surprising, you know, his teammates and stuff, because they're all looking at him like, I can't believe you're here right now and like fully present. We witnessed this medical miracle, and I think that if we were to actually pick it apart, there are some aspects to it that we can replicate that can really, really help society. Not just the NFL players, but everyone. We continue to pray for Damar Hamlin and his family. We continue to pray for the Buffalo Bills and the NFL, all those players, those executives, those coaches, everyone that's involved in the game. Because although I felt that guilt of betting on that game, I can only imagine the guilt that some of those guys out there feel from playing that game with him. So we continue to pray for that. We continue to pray for Hamlin's recovery. For the atheists, we continue to think about Hamlin and his family and his recovery, and we just continue to wish them well, wish him well, wish him a speedy recovery, a speedy full recovery. And that, you know, although those reports going into the weekend said what they said about him needing help breathing and stuff like that, still remain optimistic, hopeful, and I mean joyful, honestly, because he seems to be doing great. He seems to be doing good. When all of that happened, I did not think that that was a possibility at first. So we'll continue to monitor this, of course, and if you want to recap any of these articles, you can do it in the description below. A lot of great information about cardiac arrest, a lot of great information about, you know, side effects of it, and Damar Hamlin's case and all of that. It's all down below. Just check it out when you get a chance. And of course, you can stay connected with the show at LiveXBW on Instagram. You can also hit me up personally on Twitter at BJamesLive, and this episode will be posted absolutely everywhere. But if you want to see the episode description, other episodes, and all of that, you can go to BrianJamesLive.com and click the podcast tab, all right?
Thank you for stopping by today's show. We didn't make too much mess, but had a lot of fun. Salute to our medical heroes. We are forever in awe of your work. Also, hooray science. This is Live BW, episode 177. Until the next time, I'm Cora. Now powering down. This transmission will now end.